Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I am Naomi Abraham Brando, host for Blog Talk Radio, Getting Light. We have her on today with us, and we haven't had her on for a few weeks. But again, we have on with us Sandy Fries, who is a professional behavioral cognitive life coach therapist. And she is going to be talking about the work that she does and a book that she's having come out very soon. Sandy has been a prisoner advocate for some time now, and she has been working with quite a few people around the country in her works and to find out about the injustices in the United States and some of the ways that she can help as well. Sandy, are you on with us?
I am. Good morning.
Good morning, Sandy. And I am kind of a little bit late coming on because I got involved in some work and I just looked up at the clock and I noticed the radio show was really ready to start. Sandy, can you tell the audience a little bit about yourself? I know that many people are aware of, you know, what you do and everything, but there's a lot that don't, and I really would love to have you share that with them.
Well, yes, I would love to. I grew up in a very small central southern Indiana town. My father was a preacher. He and my mother are from Appalachian Mountains in eastern Kentucky. And they did not have an easy time growing up. But, you know, my father did become a preacher in a very, very conservative church. And he took that responsibility very seriously, but that made it very hard on us. We were made to toe the line. And if we did not toe the line, we were punished. I was sexually abused by him and physically abused as well. And I went through years of my life being a victim. After I got out of that situation, I married a man who also abused me, and I had two daughters at that time. The youngest was 3 months. So we spent 6 months living in a shelter under protection for domestic violence. And I just kind of spiraled out of control. You know, I was walking around like a zombie for years of my life. I wasted many precious years. Though I went to counseling and I saw a therapist and I saw a psychiatrist, it wasn't serving me well. And you know, I stumbled upon cognitive behavioral therapy, and I have to say that was absolutely essential in my personal healing, because it was more than just repeating the story. It was learning different tools and methods to deal with the pain of self-hatred. You know, I felt so unworthy for so many years. And so, you know, during that I learned, it helped me so much that I went on to become an accredited cognitive behavioral therapist, followed up by an accreditation in neurolinguistic programming and professional life coaching. So my big desire as a justice advocate is to continue my work with those who are incarcerated, who have been, or loved ones of those who are incarcerated, to shed light that healing is very, very possible. And if you don't heal, you're never going to have this great sense of freedom. I remember specifically one morning, I was sitting up in my office and I was working on something. I was typing something. And all of a sudden, I felt like this huge weight had been lifted off of me. And that came after I spoke out against the abuse and was disowned by my family. And so now, you know, I have four sisters and a brother. My mother is still living, but I have no contact. But, you know, that was heartbreaking. And I remember I was sitting up here typing and I thought, oh, I better not write that, because if my family sees it, they're going to be upset. And the weight shifted because I thought, they're no longer a part of my life. It doesn't matter. So sometimes you find freedom through pain.
I find that happens to so many, even men who at young ages were violated, and they hold it in. They're afraid to tell their family members because they're afraid of being rejected by them. And it, you know something, Sandy, it really does happen in many cases where the parent or the family member do. They, because of pride or because of whatever it might be, they don't want to have it get out in the public. And I'm sure that happened with you. And they try to hide it under the carpet. But it's good that you're able to get it out. A lot of people aren't. And I think that's why the prisons are so full today, is that they never let it out until they couldn't cope anymore, and they all let it out then.
Yeah, and you know, it's so ironic because, you know, as the victim, I already felt worthless enough, but then not being able to speak about it made me feel even more, much less of as a person. You know, I felt like a walking zombie for all those years. And if I had someone back at that age that would have said, you will speak up, we will take care of this, my life today, and I don't live in the past because I celebrate every single day that I have now. I'm a very optimistic person. But had my life, had I had support when I really needed it and would have been shown an active, healthy way to participate in my own healing, I could have been a very different person today.
Now, while you were in the home and all this was going on, and you weren't allowed to speak about it, but the abuse was continuous.
Yes.
That must have been very difficult.
Yes.
Very, very difficult.
Yeah, so, you know, and what I like to do now is, and I try. I speak with inmates. I correspond with inmates. I'm in touch with family members. I want to help them to understand that whether they're guilty or whether they're not, they're probably having these belief systems in their head that was ingrained in them from childhood, and they may not even align with who they really are, and they don't need to hold on to those beliefs. They need to look at them and decide, am I going to keep this? Is this how I feel? And if not, get rid of it so a positive, authentic belief can replace it.
Exactly.
And you can't punish yourself for things that have happened. You're not what happened to you, and you're not even what you've done in the past. That's not who you are. That's something.
That is true. Everyone seems to get blamed for something that someone else has done, and then you have to live with that pain and suffering.
Yes. Yeah, it's
but
sad.
You say your mother is still alive, but your father has passed, right?
He has passed, yes.
And what about your siblings? Do you get along with all of them, or are you talking with them?
No, I have no contact with my family now. My daughters, thank goodness I have my daughters, but as far as my brothers and sisters and mother, you know, no, I don't have any relationship with any of them. And, you know, if I were to open that back up, I know it would be me saying, I am sorry one more time, and I can't do that. And then that would be me putting myself back into the position of facing their disappointment in everything that I do, you know, such as this book I'm writing and my advocacy work. They don't understand that. They don't get that because it's very hard for most of them to see that there are so many incarcerated citizens that are absolutely innocent of the crimes that they have been committed, and they have a hard time seeing that it doesn't matter, even if someone did commit a crime, change is very possible. You know, they're not going to be the same person when they were at the age of 17 when they were arrested at 35. You know, rehabilitation is a very, very viable possibility.
Yeah. And we've been listening to Lawrence Sparky Lee talk about the trauma that he went through and your situations, you know, and so many others like that are very devastating. And it's fresh, it's really something to see overcome these serious trials and tribulations that you've gone through.
Yeah, yes. And he's a very strong, intelligent advocate. And you know, he works so hard. He's got such a drive and passion for others. So we align very well, you know, because we both feel the same way. And I think that, you know, childhood trauma, it can either tear people apart and destroy them, or it can bring them together and give them someone to identify with.
Yeah. So when did you actually start, you know, start working with others as a life coach therapist?
You know, what's funny is I've been doing it for a very long time, but I didn't set up a business. I just did it on a personal level. And now just with right at the beginning of January is when I set up my business, Victory from Chaos.
Can you talk a little bit about that?
Oh, I'd be happy to. Victory from Chaos, it is a coaching business, and it is set up that I am seeking nonprofit organizations that can use their grant funding to hire me as a wraparound service so that I can work with those reentering society from incarceration. I've also got a blog that I've have recently started, and I want to get information out there. I want to work with people. This is how my sessions actually work. I would schedule a 90-minute Zoom session face-to-face, you know, once a week or bi-monthly, according to the client. And I would build, I actually have built, a curriculum, things that we discuss during the sessions. And then I send, I give them life work or homework to do between sessions, follow-up emails I would receive and send. And there would be different methods and tools such as journaling. You know, I know when people hear journaling, they think of it as one type of journaling, sitting down and writing in a book. But no, it would be more of a led journal. I would give them a prompt, and maybe they could, you know, fill the rest of that out, such as, in your position now, this is what I would tell a 12-year-old boy. And then they would have to finish that out. So that would make them start thinking about positively helping others. Rebuilding their belief system is huge. So I think that is something that needs to be worked on. And I do work on that with people now. And the other thing is building an open mindset to where you're able to see things from others' perspectives. Because we all come up in very diverse cultures, religious backgrounds, ethnic backgrounds, and we need to be able to accept another's perspective. That doesn't mean we have to align ourselves with it, but in order to work with other people, you have to be able to see from their perspective how they feel about things.
Exactly. And you mentioned the you know, the trials that you've overcome, the abuses. And we had mentioned Lawrence. And Lawrence, I believe, is on with us now. Lawrence, are you on with us? I don't know if he can hear. Caller 405?
That's me.
Okay, 812.
Oh, that's Christy. It's Christy.
Oh, how
it's Christy.
Nice to know you. I didn't know. I recognized the 405, but Christy, do you have anything to say to what Sandy is speaking about? With the work that she does, the abuses that she overcame, and I had mentioned that, her situation is similar to Sparky's, because he too had been abused as a child and was in all these foster homes and overcame. And I just wanted to get some feedback on that.
Well, I know that I'm really not sure about we're all connected. You know what I'm saying? We're all connected in certain ways, as like Sandy and I, you know, we don't have that good family, you know, the moms and the sisters and all that, to go to feeling alienated and just they don't want to deal with you. I because they don't know what to do. So in some cases, like in my case. So, and it's similar to Lawrence's and my son's. And, I mean, you don't have to intend to abuse. And a lot of times, like me, I was too messed up to realize that I was unintentionally messing my children up, right, their heads. I was unintentionally abusing, basically, my children. I mean, it's just flat out. It's been a hard thing to realize, but it's true. Mental illness and drug addiction, she's been working, as a matter of fact. Can I say this?
You can say whatever you want to say, Christy.
She's been calling, and, you know, we've been chatting, and I know she's written my son, and we have been having really good talks lately, and it's been kind of a breakthrough moment. I get choked up talking about it, but
okay. I remember I didn't, it's Christy, I was thinking Christine. Christy, yes, mm-hmm. You mentioned that Sandy's been working with you on your issues as well, and also with your son.
Well, yes.
Okay, I'm sorry, I was getting it confused, but go on, I'm sorry.
Yeah, Christy, I know you have some self-esteem issues, and you have a hard time at times, you know, getting out of the house and doing things. And but you know, you're really making great progress.
Well, I am making great progress with talking about things. So my son, you know, he's grown now, but when you've got mental illness and abuse, you know, when you're such a young child, it's like their voices are, they don't talk to anybody about it or their feelings or whatever, because I think they don't want to hurt or be a problem to anybody. They don't want to say anything and get their mom in trouble, you know.
That's exactly what they do. Lawrence is on with us, too. And after you finish, Christy and Sandy, Lawrence, as a child, that had been a victim as a child, can talk to you, Christy, about what you're seeing right now about your son and how he feels or felt during his childhood. I'd like to hear from all of you on that, because when they're little like that, exactly what you're saying has happened, I know personally, and they're afraid that first of all, everyone's going to look at them as being the bad person, and also
because they're not sure if it's their fault or not, you know. They're just confused. They don't want to, like, they've got this built up emotions that they don't know how to deal with, because their brain, you know, was supposed to be developing in this good way, and it messes the whole process up. So they're scared that if they say something, their mom is going to use more or end up killing herself, or there's times when they don't say anything because they think if I say something, she'll relapse. You know, she's doing so good, so I don't want to do anything to mess it up. Or if I say something to my grandparents that are keeping me and watching us now, then they'll think I'm too much of a problem, and they'll think I'm ungrateful for them keeping us. And I mean, it just goes on and on. So these grown men end up having all of these emotions bottled up inside them, and anger too, and they feel bad for being angry, you know, like they should not be angry at their mom or whoever. And you know what, all of these feelings are normal, and
right. I was
and
going
they
to say,
should
real quickly
go ahead.
I was going to say too, we have Sandy, who was abused as a child, a female. We have Lawrence, who was abused as a child, a male. We have a mother in the middle, Christy, who has a son that went through it, and she's feeling the guilt of it. Now, Lawrence as a male and as a victim of child by being violated as a child, he can tell you how your son right now, Christy, would be feeling, as well as himself and other males. And then boy. Sandy, I'd like to have you speak more on what you went through and how you felt, as you mentioned earlier, and then talk about all the things that all of you are doing
okay. Can I say one? I need to say one more thing, because it happened last night, and it was a wonderful breakthrough, and it was just great. He called me, and I accepted the call and everything, and I told him, I said, remember, because he told me this as an adult not too long ago. I said, do you remember telling me that as an adult, you and Derek were getting into my mom's car, and you had scattered pills everywhere in the gravel and dirt alleyway by our house, because they didn't want me to take them. And they'd call my mom when they were scared, and she would come and pick them up, or she'd come in and check on me and then pick them up. And as they were getting into my mother's car, Joshua said, Mom, you need to pick. Do you choose this or do you choose the pills? And he said, I continued to just keep picking the pills up out of the dirt. And I said, I need to tell you something. I said, I know this is a little late, and I wish that Derek was around to hear and see this too and experience this too. But I said, I choose you, Josh.
Nice.
I said, I choose you. And he said, my eyes are tearing up. And then he said, I'm crying. And then he said, I can cry. It's like he was telling himself this, right? Because here he is in this prison. And he goes, my eyes are watering. And then he said, I'm crying. And then he said, I can cry. I just can't totally break down. And then he said, I'm doing the same, Mom. I'm doing the same. I choose my children and you in life. And he said, I'm going to mark this day in my calendar. I love you, Mom. And we got disconnected.
That is beyond beautiful. I read that, your message you sent.
Emails,
I'm so happy.
All of you.
I'm so happy for you. And, it's just absolutely beautiful. Something I want to say about that, too, is change is possible. You are not the same person you were back then. And, you still have a lot of work because you haven't forgiven yourself. You take a lot of self-blame.
Well, I am the same person, though. Do you know? I don't know if you know what I mean, but I am still Christy. It's just that these life experiences and so long, put, it's like a candle. It's put that candle out, but I'm still the same me. It's just got a little altered in the middle, a little messed up in the middle, but I'm coming back. I'm back.
That is fantastic to hear.
Yeah, and my son is talking more about it, and that meant so much to him because he mentioned that, as an adult, I knew he'd be open for all that talk. So it was a good day.
Everybody stop crying for a minute? Okay. I know how hard it is, and sometimes we have to laugh instead of cry. There's so much pain and sorrow and suffering out there. And right now, critical times hard to deal with are here. And we're trying to survive. We're just trying to survive. So talking about these things, if nothing else, talking about these things is going to not only do a little healing, but it's also going to let the audience know that these are the painful moments. These are painful times. And these are people that have gone through all this pain and sorrow and have overcome. And they've started their own thing. Sandy with her life coach therapy, and Lawrence with his legacy program, and each one teach one. And I think it's awesome what all of you have been doing. I'd like to have you talk, first of all, Sandy, talk a little bit about the book and what you're doing with the book, and then Lawrence with what you're doing, because these are things that even people who have had struggles in life, who have gone through so much pain and sorrow, they were able to overcome, and they are now on a mission to help others. And so, Sandy, first, talk about your book and what you're doing, and then Lawrence, and then Christy, I want you to talk more about you and what you've overcome throughout the years.
Okay.
And I'll say, since I've met you, I haven't met you personally, but since I've been interacting with you and communicating with you, I have seen a change in you. You have been getting stronger. You have been able to think more clearly. And I think that's an asset. That's an attribute, and it's a good one.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think so also. I mean, it's been a while since we started talking, but my heart feels better. It's just all better. And I'm working with Sandy and Lauren, so I'm trying to get help in there to him, too.
Absolutely. Well, I will speak just a moment about other things I'm doing, and then if we have time, I'd like to read just a very short excerpt from the book I'm in the process of writing. Later this month, I'm supposed to speak it's actually like a Farm Aid concert in northern Indiana, and I'm going to be discussing life without parole and the emotional damages and things along that line. Plus, I'll be also discussing my business, Victory from Chaos. And then I'll be doing a workshop in August in Columbus, Ohio, about cognitive behavioral therapy and how that can help with those who are incarcerated. But what I am working on right now, feverishly and passionately, is the book. I am so excited. It's called The United States Injustice System, and I begin discussing various laws that have been put in place to protect all United States citizens, including those who are incarcerated. Of course, unfortunately, that's not working the way it is supposed to be working in many of our facilities and institutions. And beyond that, I discuss the parallel between some of our history and how incarcerated people are treated today in many cases. But I also have, this is the chapter I would kind of like to just read an excerpt from, Childhood Trauma Leading to Incarceration. And this is about Emad Yudin. Emad Yudin and his siblings were born in Jerusalem. Though they lived with both parents, life was anything but peaceful. The front door of their home, made of sheet metal, was riddled with bullet holes. The interior of the home was blackened from a fire started by Israelis who were searching for Emad's father and uncle as they refused to acquiesce to the newly formed government. Emad came to expect beatings at the hands of his father and often witnessed his father's rage boil over as he victimized his mother. While some memories are forgotten over time, others seem to haunt us like a reoccurring nightmare. One such memory that Emad is unable to dismiss came after a visit with family. Sitting around the table, the conversation between the adults turned to the need for school children to be successful in their studies. With pride, Emad's uncle instructed his son to recite the alphabet. Fear rose in Emad as his cousin, who had been tutored, neared the end of his perfect recitation. Emad's father instructed him to follow suit, but he was unprepared. He had not been tutored, and his mother could neither read nor write. His father was beyond embarrassed. He began to verbally berate them, but the physical abuse came after the other family members were gone. Both Emad and his mother were repeatedly struck until she was able to break away. After grabbing Emad by the hand, the two ran to the home of a nearby elderly couple. They took solace there until it was safe to return home. In 1973, Emad's father relocated to the United States. The family was to eventually follow suit. After he left, the family's financial situation grew dire. Because they lived in poverty, they were judged and looked down upon by other family members. His mother had no choice but to accept food from welfare. Sugar bread was a typical breakfast, lunch, and dinner. On school days, Emad would often wait for his classmates to return to class after lunch so he could scour the area for leftover food. Usually, there was nothing left behind. Eventually, Emad's father took the children from Chicago, Illinois. America, the melting pot where everyone was accepted. The streets are lined with gold and equality abounds. This is how Emad as a child viewed America. It had to be better than the reality of living in Jerusalem. His anticipation of a new and better life quickly diminished as he and his siblings exited the plane. Their father was present to take the children to their new home, but he had a woman with him, a yellow-haired woman. The children were disgraced. School in the new country did not go as expected. Emad, his siblings, and other students of ethnic diversity were bullied relentlessly. He began to see himself as the protector. Though small in stature, his anger and disillusionment were unleashed. There was no turning back. His mother eventually joined the family in Chicago. The beatings and abuse suffered at the hands of the father while living in Jerusalem once more became a daily ritual. It was not long until Emad found favor with a gang offering acceptance and a sense of belonging. This is how the journey to Emad's incarceration began. Wow. So later in the book, I'll be discussing his life while he was incarcerated.
Nice. You have a really good gift for writing. Oh, my word.
Thank you so much, Lauren.
Wow.
Yeah. Word.
That was
I want to thank you, too, for letting me interview you.
Sandy, that was a true story about one of the incarcerated that you're writing about?
Yes. This is from a Zoom interview that I conducted with him a couple of months ago.
Wow.
I think it's great that she's doing interviews not just based on incarceration, but the causative factors. And I'm also in her book, and I think that it gives light and credit to Marion of, you know, when we look at the incarcerated, we need to look at the story behind it and why the crimes were committed, not that the crime was committed. And that just emphasizes that we need more insight, and people like what Sandy Fries is doing and her book, it's really necessary for today. And I just applaud you for all the work you do, not just with your book, but just with you're all over the place, and your words are powerful, and your story is amazing, and what you do is just phenomenal.
It takes a lot to even, you know, disclose and talk about what you've been through, and to do that with all of you, really, even Christy, with your situation, you know, with your addiction and the kids. But it takes a lot to talk about these things. And you not only are you letting it out and getting some kind of healing from yourselves talking about it, but think about the thousands or hundreds of thousands of others out there who are going through the same thing. And maybe in listening to your stories, maybe they'll be more open to disclosing as well.
Yep, and that's the most important part of what I do is to get that message out that you individuals have the capability to heal, to move forward. Instead of looking at every mistake, look at it as a step, an opportunity to learn, which is going to boost you further.
Yep. And I could sum that up in three words. Victory from chaos.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome. You know what's funny is, so legacy programs would not be possible unless there's two pivotal women in part that helped me with it that actually are the backbones of it. My sister-in-law and, of course, Sandy Fries, which she did the grunt work for me and helped me through it and taught me how to do it through the process. And it was through collaborating with her that we have a lot of the stuff from legacy programs is from our just talking and listening. And that's why we at Legacy, we take on not just the incarcerated, but we take on the family members that are incarcerated as well, because we feel that you're doing time with your family. You're doing time with your friends. I mean, when somebody's missing from society, it leaves a void. And that void is the God-given purpose of that person in that community, in this world, that is just stored away on a shelf. And so, you know, that's why I always say how it begins is never how it ends. And we are proof of that, you know, going forward. Of course, what Christy was saying, she is, right now, she and her son are enrolled in the legacy programs, and we are doing everything we can for her to not just bring curriculum and insight and tools to her son, but also to the prison that he's at. So that's how this works. When we help one, we help them all. And that's why advocacy is so important, because it spreads like wildfire, and it is contagious. So If you want, I give a little insight on Christy, on her son, because, of course, I grew up, I'm a product of child molestation, physical abuse. My mother was a drug addict. She sold me for her drugs to random men, actually. And, you know, I got out of, throughout the years, my relationship with her, I was trying to fix it. I was trying to look past it because I numbed myself. You know, I disregarded what I went through and gave it a purpose and a cause. and a means to an end mentality. And there was that belief behind it. But dealing with my mother after I got out of prison, when I got the tools necessary, I realized that I was conditioning myself. That I was from just as a 6-year-old. And
right.
I couldn't identify my emotions because it comes from a term called arrested development. And so
yes.
And not only that was – my empathetic gate kind of shut down. When I was a victim, I told myself I would never be a victim again. So I could never go back to that moment because I disregarded it and moved forward thinking that it wasn't affecting me because I was going off of the beliefs of and standard of society, saying move on, don't cry, don't
You're
express
striving.
Yourself. Be a man,
right.
You know. This.
Well, yeah, especially as a male, it's much harder to get – you can get in touch with your feelings, but boy, you better not show them, right?
Oh, absolutely. And so, but it came out, you know, as much as I thought it wasn't a part of me, you know, they say violence and anger are expressions of unmet needs. And there was that need to express myself because I was silenced. I was told that I was insignificant, that my words didn't matter. Me, I couldn't express myself. I was just kind of existing. I wasn't living my life. So growing up, dealing with my mother, I was basing future experiences off past experiences. So mm-hmm. I thought the result was going to be the same moving forward, even though I was in my 30s dealing with this woman that had no power over me except emotionally. She couldn't beat me anymore. She wasn't in the
that's,
state to do it.
That,
she couldn't
that's
tell
the most
me.
Important.
Huh?
Your emotional, I mean, that is so important. That's a stronghold. Her
yeah.
having, yeah.
Well, and I was trying to forgive her for what, you know, what was going on and moving forward. But the problem with it was, the problem was I was still hanging on to those resentments. You know, I still had these beliefs that I wasn't challenging or changing. I had these beliefs that allowed me to move on without addressing anything. It was a blockade kind of. And, you know, in dealing with my mom, I wanted to see the best in her. But in the end, why I cut her loose, why I could have nothing to do with her, because I realized she was toxic. Because we have this thing growing up where we watch everything that our parents do, everything that the neighbors do, and we adopt
right.
things. We make them part of who we are. And I realized
oh, yeah.
at some point that her words were not matching up with her actions. She was talking about being a good Christian. She was talking about being a good mother. But her actions continued because I would scrutinize everything that she did because I have nothing good to go on. She's been a screw-up her whole life. So I had to look at these things growing up because now I have these tools. Now I can identify these things.
Amen.
And now I have the power to walk away. And when she kept... but it wasn't balancing out and there was no accountability and later on I realized there was no integrity. I sat there and I had to walk away. And so that's important for, you know, former addicts and mothers and fathers of children, is that we are continually watching you. And when we see that something doesn't match up, that's when we start breaking away emotionally and then eventually physically. So,
you know, years
just
ago,
in my
No, go ahead, Lawrence.
No. I was just saying, so, you know, Christy, what you're doing is you're showing the work. You're putting forth the effort, and your son's realizing it, and that's why he's opening up. He's not opening up because he just wants to open up. He's opening up because he's starting to trust you again, because that trust somewhere down the line was gone. But now you're putting in the work and the effort to where he wants to open up. He's trying to rebuild that relationship. And for him going back, it's very important that he's able to express himself to you like that. And it's a huge breakthrough. It really is. And but
yes.
and all in all,
yes.
you're giving him that safe zone that he should have had as a child. So,
right.
you know,
exactly.
I commend you for what you're doing.
I just like to
yes.
say something real quickly with all three of you. You know, doing social work, we used to do genograms when we met with clients because of medical, you know, to find out what the medical history was, the addictions, what in the genes, whatever. But there was a lot of times families, it's a cycle. They go through it over and over again. If there's not some kind of split, if there's not some kind of change, it just goes on and on and on. I don't know if any of you had ever talked to your parents about themselves, like with Lawrence, like when you were talking about your mother. Do you know anything about your mother's past, her growing up, or anything like that? And
oh,
Sandy,
yeah. No, I heard from my uncle of all the stuff. My other family told me about her upbringing. She's never expressed it, but she's a product of molestation herself by her own parents as well. Everything I went through, well, to some degree, my mom went through, my grandmother went through, it's been a cycle. And I mean, when I used to sit in prison, I did 20 years. And when I was sitting in there, I was like, you know what, when I get out, my son will never experience any of this crap that I've gone through. And it's been my drive ever since to be aware and to see things in hindsight and to be responsible and act with integrity. So, like, my son will never experience the stuff I experienced, you know, and I'm proud of that.
The reason I ask is because sometimes when the family members, when it's a cycle like that, sometimes someone will grow up and they'll say, I'm never going to do that. They'll be determined that they'll never follow suit with what their parent or their grandparent or their great-grandparent went through. And a lot of them are able to, but then there's some that do follow suit in spite of the fact that they hated it. They follow suit,
yeah,
and in later years do the very same thing. So these are some of the issues that we have in this country, in this world today, is that so many people who are in prison, so many people who are in the streets or whatever, it's all a cycle that they've gone through. And either they overcame, like you and Sandy and Christy, or they're just the opposite. And it's sad because it'll be a continuation of the same problematic, painful problems.
Well, and that goes to the empathetic gate. When you have a traumatic experience, studies show that you have emotions that are attached to it and characteristics, eventually a behavior. And what happens is you close it down. That's why bullies or people that are bullied usually become bullies, is because when you close that empathetic gate, the consequences are severe to the point where you can no longer relate to being victimized because you've blocked it out. You didn't address it. It was never expressed. It was never voiced. It was never a thing where you sat there and said, this is wrong. You never explored it. You never connected the dots. And what happens is when you close that empathetic gate, you're more prone to act out because it's a form of power now. You take that victimization without realizing it and trying to take that power back and trying to gain control, because a lot of people that are victimized, we're powerless. We have no control, either mentally, physically, or emotionally. And so we act out in that. And that's why the cycle keeps going, is because it's never been addressed, and you can no longer relate to how that person feels. And that's why it's called an empathetic gate, because you have no empathy. You can't empathize with how this makes a person feel. So you just kind of act out what you've been taught. And that's why it's important for the community to come together, because if not, these kids are adopting things that they see. They're cloning people that they know. They are they're living by traditions, and they're moving forward. And it's horrible for the community around them.
It really is. And you know, I think I know for me personally, I was not at all encouraged to figure out who I was. I was told who I was. I wasn't able to discern my feelings because my feelings didn't matter. I had to do exactly what was expected of me, when it was expected, and how it was expected. And so I've worked very hard, Lawrence, as have you, I know, to break the cycle in our lives. You know, my daughters are very, very strong emotionally, and very secure in their bodies and in who they are. I mean, they flourished. However, they still witnessed the abuse I went through, and it has caused them problems. They're aware of what I've gone through. And, you know, they've seen one of their fathers, you know, after breaking my ribs and how we had to run out of the house. And, you know, I tried to call the police. He pulled the phone out of, you know, they're very, very affected by the things that they see. That is exactly why having an open, honest conversation, having many over and over and over, and encouraging our children to speak what they think and how they feel is imperative. Because you're right, if that's not done, the vicious cycle continues. And also my grandparents and my mother, my father was physically abused. My mother was molested also. It's not something she will discuss, but I know that to be a fact because my aunt, thankfully, is very transparent with me.
And that's one of the things is that we move forward with what we know best. And additional information is always good, and that's why it's good to have good people around us and effective and productive people. Because
definitely,
when we have outside information, we're able to make better choices and decisions. And, you know, when we grow up, our parents, they're very one way. And I think it's like what we talk about is that people go with the standards of society. So we have to attack the standards of society to actually make a change because back then, you know, if you ever notice anyone that's born in the 50s, they don't really talk about any of their childhood or they kind of dismiss it. And by dismissing it, it's never addressed and it's never properly encouraged to fix it because there's nothing wrong. We've normalized so much in our lives, like in prison, it's no different. I saw so many murders in my first year that I was able to normalize these where enough to at the point in within 60 days, I walked over a body that was the guy was butchered. He was stabbed, I think, 56 times, and there was blood everywhere where it was a really steady flow. And I was able to walk over his body so I can get my canteen to my cell. So I could get my bag of food over there because I didn't want to sit out there in the sun. And so to sit there and walk over a body, you know, I sit there and wonder how I normalize this. And, you know, that's what, just what we do in society. And it's funny you bring up the – or it's tragic that you bring up that event with your parents or with you and your rib being broke because one of my earliest childhood memories is my mother's boyfriend throwing her through a glass table – and breaking four of her ribs. And I sat there and I was just, I saw it, you know, he was a 6'4" man, very healthy. And she's just 100 pounds and he picked her up like nothing. And in the air and when she crashed, to this day, that's affected me. And I don't really address that, but it's that memory never fades. Like I could see it anytime I think about it. And nobody ever asked me after that, like, hey, how does this make you feel? Is this normal? But when I saw my mom go back to him, that's what made me normalize it. That's what said, well, this is what love is. This is what parents do. They fight, but they love each other. And I think that shaped my relationship with my mother to where I, you know, no matter what you do to somebody in family, you're still a family. You still have that loyalty.
Oh, my goodness. I've heard that so many times, Lawrence. I have heard that so many times. What happens in a family stays in a family. Families always need to come back together regardless. But, you know, it's impossible to move forward in strength and passion when you are carrying the weight of past trauma behind you. You have got to somehow figure out how to drop that bag.
Yeah. I wasn't able to drop the bag until I was able to help people, until I was actually able to share my story. But other than that, I remember my mom when I found out that I was being molested. I went to school and they did that stupid doll thing, and I went home and I said, "Hey, mom, I think this is wrong. What's this? You know, what's going on?" And I remember the, what she told me. She says, you know, you're the man of the house, and what you do for the family is for the family. And so every time I was molested after that, I kept thinking, this is what family does for each other. We through the good and the bad. And I just kept thinking that I can't let my mom down. I can't let my family down. I had my brother and my sister to think of, you know, and I remember being molested, and I used to hide them underneath my bed.
Yeah.
And, you know, because I didn't want, because I knew something was wrong, but I didn't want them to experience what I was experiencing. And, you know, to this day, my brother still remembers me hiding him. And, you know, and my sister doesn't, of course, but that's what family does. And so I think I got the two confused when I was being molested and I didn't say nothing, and when I was hiding them, and I kind of merged them into one, to where in the end I was doing what family does for family, and I was protecting them. And that later manifested in some straight bullshit, to be honest, because now I have these loyalty issues that I can't fix. It's just I'm loyal to a fault. But
right, me too. That's
but you're
horrible.
You're loyal to people that are working along the same lines you are, who are transparent. You know, so that loyalty is a good thing. But yeah, you probably get worn out, don't you?
Hell yeah. Sometimes I have to take that step back and revisit my circle. And I got, you know, I let God prune them now. You know, I let God take people and give people, and I respect the process. But before, when somebody toxic in my life would leave, I would freak out. I would think it's me. And then I would start turning into a people pleaser. And then by the end of the day, I'd sit there and take off that social mask and then another one and another one and realize that I was five different people throughout the day. And I felt fake. I felt like a fraud. I mean,
right.
I was living up to other people's standards. And, you know, eventually I just got to a point where I was like, you know what? If they don't love me for who I am, then they could hate me for who they think I am. I'm fine with that. Like, we're good. And I think going forward, you know, God puts good people in our lives. He puts people that are meant to be on the path to keep us on our path. And I don't take anything for granted. I think nothing's a coincidence. And, you know, what we have now is I create my family. I create my friends. I create my circle. And, you know, iron sharpens iron, so one does another, as it says, I believe, in James. And you know, the Bible is alive today. There's lessons for parenthood, for conduct of a person. And just to – there's so much power in those stories that I gain strength from today.
Yeah. Yeah, when you stop living for others and living for yourself, that's when you are going to soar.
Absolutely.
I think the people-pleasing just comes from when you're a child on up. That is such a typical thing for kids that were abused or, you know, not nurtured and their needs met. They keep wanting, you know, maybe if I do this, she'll be better. Maybe if I do this and act this way, you know, they'll be nicer or, you know, so you start being the people pleaser and you stop helping yourself.
You know,
right. And I think something that's important, too, is, you know, when something happens that's a negative, that is not something we desired to have happened, that is not going to destroy our lives. We are not going
to
die when something negative happens to us.
And you know, when Lawrence was saying about good people coming into his life, you know, and he mentioned, I think you, Sandy, or Lawrence mentioned something about the Bible. And I just want to read a scripture really quick, Matthew 25, chapter 25, 31 to 46. And it says, like, basically, when Jesus comes back, when the Christ comes back into this world, he's going to gather all the nations, and he's going to separate them one from another, as a shepherd divides his sheep from the goats. And he shall set the sheep on his right side, right hand, but the goats on the left. And you might have heard this. Then shall the king say unto them on the right, on his right hand, come ye blessed of my father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was hungry, and you gave me meat. I was thirsty, and you gave me drink. I was a stranger, and you took me in. Naked, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you visited me. I was in prison, and you came unto me. Then shall the righteous answer, saying, Lord, when saw we thee, and hungry, and fed thee, or thirsty, and gave you drink? When did we see a stranger, and take you in? You know, and this goes on, and then the king says, verily I say unto you, inasmuch as you have done it unto one of the least of my brothers, you have done it unto me. Then he shall turn to the other side, and he shall say unto them, depart from me, you cursed, into everlasting fire, prepared for the devils and his angels. For I was hungry, and you gave me no meat. I was thirsty, and you gave me no drink. I was a stranger, and you took me not in. Naked, and you did not clothe me. In prison, and you did not visit me. And I'm going to stop right there, because one of the things I see happening in this world today is every man for themselves. They don't want to be, and they don't want to take the time out to get to know a person who has either been in prison, or a person who has been violated in some way, or a person who has been hungry, without clothes, without future. And a lot of these volunteers out in the communities that do volunteers to feed the hungry or do a lot of these things, a lot of them are also profiting, because they are also getting more. I just feel like if everybody did a little part, like Lawrence was saying, like you, Sandy, if everybody did a little part in doing something nice of supporting someone instead of judging them, and that's what we have in this country, in the prison system, in the communities, we have everybody being quick to judge, forgetting that they themselves have sinned, that they have themselves have done something wrong. A lot of people who have been abused, if they had the support that they should have had in the communities, they wouldn't be in prison today. And a lot of them went to the wrong people to get advice when they were hurting, and the wrong people gave them advice that caused them to be incarcerated, many for life and many for life without.
You know I'm sorry.
No, I was just gonna say that, you know, and when I was a gang member, nobody ever asked why I became a gang member. Nobody ever saw the prequel. You know, they just saw the results. And the reason why I became a gang member is because one of the gang members beat up my stepdad because he found out he was molesting me. And at that point, I adopted anything that he was. I wanted to be him. I felt a loyalty to him. And for him to stick up for me, I felt that was my family. But nobody ever asked, why did you become a gang member? Nobody cared about the story. They just cared about judging me and ridiculing me and talking behind my back and to my face. But if anyone ever would have asked, why did you become a gang member, I think people would have tried to, you know, well, hey, I got a different idea for you. Why don't you come over here? So that just goes to, I'm just affirming what Leona's saying. Sorry.
You know, I wrote something. This is like Teacher Awareness Month here where I'm at in Oklahoma. And this man posted a big, long thing. And I commented back, you know, that our system has failed these children. I said, who is going to accept their part in letting this happen? Not those few that have power or wealth and the ability, not the middle class or the common folk either. Not many people want to share about their mental health issues because they have spent so many years trying to figure out how to hide their feelings, their thoughts and emotions, and deal with it themselves because they feel ashamed, different, not normal. They feel like they're too much for their families because their families don't have a quick solution, and they grow tired of dealing with the symptoms and get embarrassed by them. And I said, so let's skip along in this story. These kids self-medicate to get some form of relief. Those awkward, shy, scared, hyper ones that get in trouble for not paying attention or minding eventually break laws. And then they get the help they need by those normal, middle-class people representing their best interest and the public, go figure, judging them. Their fate is sealed, stamped with labels, shipped places. And I have to mention SAMHSA on this. I'm sorry. I'm on a SAMHSA kick. There, you know, there's Substance Abuse and Mental Health, you know, Association. This is who we're going to for our counseling to get better, I thought. And I found out that it says straight up when you look them up that their mission, their purpose is to save the taxpayers money for health and addiction related costs to the community. That bothers me. I mean, I understand that, but that should not be their mission. And when I called SAMHSA, they said, I asked them what programs they have inside the prisons. And they said they don't, he didn't think that they had any on the inside, but they do for reentry, right? And that bothers me so bad. Nobody is helping these people that have years. They're just warehousing them. There's no substance abuse and mental health. They're not inside the prison. They just come in to make sure the taxpayers are not paying for their treatment and their, you know, to lower the cost. See, nobody's taking or accepting their role in this, and that irritates me. I'm shaking right now. That irritates me so bad because, you know, I feel like those people that don't have kids in the school system, we still support the schools and the teachers being paid more, right? I mean, we all know that that's an important part of a child's life is their education. But these children have fallen through the cracks, and the teachers and everybody need to be, you know, taught the symptoms, you know, to realize the symptoms so they can step in and do something. Like Leona was saying, I think that if, you know, if that happened and somebody, you know, like the court system or whatever, you know, worked with you and your children, I think you would have done whatever needed to be done to keep your children, right? And it's true. I didn't know what to do. I couldn't picture anything better than what I was going through right now. But if it came down to somebody helping me with my children and me with me, I think that it would have made the biggest difference in the world and saved a lot of hurt and anguish and tears, you know. You both said curriculum, and I think that that's so important to get to these men and women when they're in prison, in prison, inside the prison, not just reentry. Reentry is great, but we need to start healing and stuff. I think that's where you're going to see the most change when they get out, is what we do for them when they're in.
Yeah. Why reentry does not start when we get out. I'm the product of that. I've been out right. 6 months. And I'm going to tell you right now, what the 20 years that I did not prepare me for the 6 months that I've been going through. And I just heard something from Cardell Sims on his thing talking about parole officers, that they're our go-to and they have all these programs. Let me tell you what my parole officer said. There are no programs for me. I sat there and said, well, where am I supposed to live? You can live under a bridge. I said, how am I supposed to report once a week? Well, you could stay, you know, you could stay over by the gas station. But that was the resources that he offered me. There was no 90-day motel. There was no, you know, and then every program shut me down saying that because they were being screened by the sheriff's department and already had a history since 9 years old, so they weren't going to help me. I was a nuisance to them. So, and that's why reentry I wrote a curriculum that addresses these beliefs, these manners, these habits. Of course, I studied CBT, so a lot of my stuff is CBT related, as Sandy knows. And that's why I believe that these guys have to be free mentally before they're freed physically. And they have
Absolutely.
To be freed emotionally as well. And that's why I dumbed down to, you know, it's not dumbed down to where nobody can relate, but the case studies have showed, or the data behind it, is that I only have one person that's failed out of my program. That's it. And that's because we go in and we talk about childhood traumas. We connect the dots. We go back to where it began, and we explore the causative factors of why we do what we do. And we need to free our men and women in the prison system and in the jails mentally and emotionally before physically. And when we do that and we address these issues, these guys and women have tools to come out and to be able to express themselves and ask for help and to have the confidence and to be encouraged to seek it. So, I mean, and I'm going to call – actually, I got to call the Lawton Correctional Facility today and see what we're going to do. But I think that's what we need more is curriculum. We need more awareness. And for – the system not to provide that, I think they have failed. And I'm tired of hearing people falling through the cracks. It seems like it's a go-to now, and there's
That's
no solution
right.
to it. There's no resolve. And to me, I think it's horse crap.
You're right about that. And I'm going to say there are prisoners, and I have to get this out, because there are prisoners who have been targeted throughout the country in their prison system, whether it be because of family victims' family connections, whether it be from just some of the higher-ups there that are getting something out of it. But there are prisoners who have been deprived throughout the years of education. They've been deprived of work programs. And then when they are so broken and they are medically ill, they let them suffer for years before they do any surgery. And when they do that surgery, they do it so that those people come out with, they're broken physically and mentally. There are prisoners since this pandemic who have been confined to their cells 22 to 24 hours a day with nothing. There was recently one who had surgery on the shoulder, and 5 years ago on the knee, they removed the cartilages, which they did not have to do, which is bone on bone. So this prisoner can't even exercise anymore, can't even lift weights anymore, cannot do anything. That's a broken person. And it's gotten to the point where that person doesn't even want to live anymore. And this is going on throughout the country. And I want to say this because you're going to be hearing about these things. You're going to be hearing it. And it could be happening sooner than we think. But I want the public to know that they are part of the problem. And these people that have the ability to help others who are going through these things, and they don't, they're going to be just as bad. The curse will be on them. These people that are in legal services, these civil rights organizations who are all over the place getting their names out there and doing absolutely nothing. And I just wanted to add that, because we have too many people who were victims before becoming offenders and who have been victimized all over again. There are too many suicides in these prisons. And there are too many people right now that are contemplating suicide. And we have to think about these things. And I want the audience to know, instead of going after advocates, instead of trying to find fault with your neighbors, instead of trying to find to make yourself look big and bad, start looking at something decent. You have two people on this radio show who have been victimized as children, violated, and now they are out there trying to help others. You have a mother who has a son inside suffering from psychological issues and who came from a home of addictions. And she's on this radio show talking as well about the differences and the progress that they've made. So I hope the audience will listen, and I hope they'll do something about it. I hope that they will try to help instead of being part of the problem all the time. And we have another 9.5 minutes, so I'm going to let you three talk about anything you want to talk about and get that word out there.
I was
Absolutely.
Just going
to pivotal.
that I posted a deal that says if you aren't an activist during time, this time in history, then just keep your mouth shut and get out of the way for those of us who are fighting your battles as well. And there's people that are out there and it that are helping doing people doing things and taking pictures as they're doing it. And I put be charitable or be careful that you do not do your charitable things given before men to be seen by them, or else you have no reward. That's in the Bible. And in other words, good deeds should be done for intention, not attention.
Right.
A lot of these places are stepping up and showing up like reentry this, reentry that, but a lot of them are for attention and not with their intentions. That goes with our states and our country and everything. I mean, they need to put their money or mouth where their money is, money where their mouth is, whatever it is. They
right.
need to be caring, you know.
And to go along with that, Chrissy, I would like to point out that advocacy work is not a work of competition. You know, when we align ourselves with other advocates that feel the same way we do, we all benefit. We all learn from one another. You know, I've learned a great deal from Lawrence. We've talked about many, many very pivotal subjects and topics and strategized and, you know, but we don't compete. You know, we need to help each other rise to the occasion rather than wanting
unite.
To be seen above others.
Yeah. And, you know, Sandy, let me tell you something about what you did. You know, you helped me with the paperwork to start Legacy Programs. You talked me through it. We had, 2 hours, which should have been a 5-minute process to figure
yeah.
it out and making sure it was right. And look at the people I've been able to help because of that and the people that got on board because of you, what you started. And that just took a couple hours of your time. You even paid for the paperwork to be processed. So, you know, that's the stuff we advocates do. And I always give credit to you and Christine for what you guys have done. And that's why I pay it forward. You know, at Legacy Programs, Education Reentry, we don't pay or we don't ask for payments. We go off of donations.
Yeah.
We don't charge any of the family members. We do everything what we can, and we pay it forward. And that's because of the process you started. That's because of us talking, and you're like, well, why don't you start a business first? You know, don't worry about the 501 right now. Worry about the business. And that's where it all flourished. And so you're a prime example of what we can do for people struggling and trying to. And, you know, today I even have my own website, legacyprograms.net. And it, you know, that's where it's gotten because of you. You know, if it wasn't for that frustration in me and voicing what I needed help with and you offering to help and being like, well, I don't really – because there's no money in advocacy. There is no money in advocacy. We are doing this out of our pockets, out of our time, and for the better cause of our people. And, you know, you're a poster child for what could be done and what should be done. And Leona as well. Leona gave me an hour and a half every Sunday. First it started as a guest, and now it gives me my voice every single Sunday. And now I'm bringing other people on and paying it forward and getting their voice out there. And so it
That's
just shows
right.
that when you plant a seed, you could get a rose bush or you could get a fruit tree, but whatever you get, other people are going to benefit as well.
Absolutely.
Right.
And you know, I've got to tell you, Lawrence, none of your business would have been possible without your knowledge, your ideals, and your hard work. So, you know, I can definitely thank you for sharing that. I helped you with that, but, man, this is your baby all the way, and I am so proud of you.
Thank you.
Yeah. Leona, I appreciate it. I mean, both of you, I mean, I've talked with all of you. We end up talking for 2 and 3 hours
yeah.
about different things, but you would not believe what a difference it makes to have people that you can actually talk to, you know.
Christy, what you're saying is true. I want to bring up, I know the Queen of England lost her husband recently, and it went, well, I'm going to let you guys finish up on this.
Okay.
So,
go ahead. It's your show.
Why don't you give your information? I know we're running fairly low on time.
I was just going to ask you the same thing. So you can reach me at legacyprograms.net. We have contact information. You could reach me, Lawrence Drenk, LAWRENCE, D as in David, RENK, at gmail.com. We are 24/7. We at Legacy are starting a crisis hotline as well for anyone reentering to get some solutions to the problem and to be heard. And also, we are on a line. We're on Yelp. We are on every Facebook. You can look up anywhere. And Legacy Programs Education Reentry. We are here to serve not just the incarcerated, but the families and the communities. And, you know, how it begins is not how it ends. 20 years ago, I was a former inmate. Today, I'm a successful advocate. And you are not alone out there. So anybody that wants to jump on board with what we're doing, we accept everybody and anybody. And just get in where you fit in type scheme. Come as you are.
And I want to respond before Sandy goes on with what Christy was saying. As I started to say, the Queen of England lost her husband. For almost 3 weeks, that's all the talk was about, a 99-year-old who passed away because he was so famous or powerful. This is not the way it should be, right? No one should have that much attention when there's a world full of pain and sorrow and suffering, and people like yourself, they worship that, and respectfully, they worship that person, but they almost put them above God, because all these things that happen in the world, one of the things that our Creator wanted and wants today is for all of us to come together in unity, in harmony, and that's all.
Amen.
I wanted to say. No, Sandy, I'm sorry. I wanted to let you I have to get that out, because Christy was talking about how it makes her feel good. It makes her feel good when people, when all of you have been helping her and everybody's come together. This is the way it needs to be in this country. Everybody needs to come together and help one another, talk to one another, have some compassion for one another, not just because you've got money or you're up in a higher status, a social status or whatever. But help each other, because that's the way godly people are. That's the way that God wants. In the book of Ephesians chapter 6, it talks about the wrestling against flesh, not flesh and blood, but spirit, the evil and the good, and which one is going to win. So, Sandy, I'm sorry, finish up.
Yeah. And thank you for pointing that out. That's so true. You can reach me. My business is Victory from Chaos. You can look at victoryfromchaos.com, and it'll pop up online, my webpage. Also, it is on Facebook. My Facebook groups are Factually Innocent and Injustice Reform and Reentry. You can find me on LinkedIn, Twitter, and YouTube. Just pop my name in the search engine, and you'll see some of the work I've been doing. And I want to thank everybody also for all the wonderful comments. And before we cut off, I want to tell everyone to have a wonderful day.
Great.
Thank you.
I wanted to
say, Christy, did you have any closing thoughts?
I thank all of you guys and love all you guys, and if it wasn't for you guys, I would not be at the point where I have opened up the opportunity with my son to where he can start healing too. There's guilt, though, that's associated with, you know, me getting help and him not getting the help. You know, it's kind of a guilt feeling. Well, I'm out
here
we're getting
working on that.
I wanted to let the audience know real quickly too. Christy has a petition coming out, justice for Josh. So I'm just letting everyone know, and it will be through change.org, Christy.
Yes.
Okay, and there will be announcement. I'm sure Sandy and Lawrence and everyone will be letting everyone know to sign this petition, please. It doesn't matter where you're from. Please sign that petition when she gets it out there.
Absolutely. And also
sign and share.
Yeah, definitely. And just for anyone that's listening out there that wants to donate and do that, you know, everyone can use that, but look into the person. If you can't notify or talk to or have a conversation with the person that's in charge of that, like, for instance, Legacy or Victory from Chaos or New Vision Organization, something's wrong. You shouldn't have to talk to a secretary, or it should be very personable when you put your money forward to help other people. So get to know your advocate, get to know where you're donating, and that's how we edge out these places and these organizations that aren't doing crap for us but pocketing your money.
We have 3 seconds left, so we are going to be closing now. Thank you all for being on, and I look forward to it. Hopefully, Sandy and Chrissy, hopefully you can be on Sunday with Lawrence when we have the interview. We're going to be pretty much interviewing on that day. I will be on there, though. So we're going to be closing now, and thank you, everyone, for listening in.
Love y'all.
Thank you, guys. Thank you. Have a great day.
You too.